Harry's week passed. They drove about the dreaming lanes or idled in cheerful inanity upon lake or lawn. In the evening, Roxanne, sitting inside, played to them while the ashes whitened on the glowing ends of their cigars. Then came a telegram from Kitty, saying that she wanted Harry to come east and get her. So Roxanne and Geoffrey were left alone in that privacy of which they never seemed to tire. Alone thrilled them again. They wandered about the house, each feeling intimately the presence of the other. They sat on the same side of the table like honeymooners. They were intensely absorbed, intensely happy. The town of Marlowe, though a comparatively old settlement, had only recently acquired a society. 5 or 6 years before, alarmed at the smoky swelling of Chicago, 2 or 3 young married couples, bungalow people, had moved out. Their friends had followed. The Geoffrey Curtins found an already formed set prepared to welcome them. A country club, ballroom and golf links yawned for them. And there were bridge parties and poker parties and parties where they drank beer and parties where they drank nothing at all. It was at a poker party that they found themselves a week after Harry's departure. There were 2 tables, and a good proportion of the young wives were smoking and shouting their bets and being very daringly mannish for those days. Roxanne had left the game early and taken to perambulation. She wandered into the pantry and found herself some grape juice. Beer gave her a headache. And then passed from table to table, looking over shoulders at the hands, keeping an eye on Geoffrey and being pleasantly unexcited and content. Geoffrey, with intense concentration, was raising a pile of chips of all colours, and Roxanne knew by the deepened wrinkle between his eyes that he was interested. She liked to see him interested in small things. She crossed over quietly and sat down on the arm of his chair. She sat there 5 minutes, listening to the sharp, intermittent comments of the men and the chattering of the women, which rose from the table like soft smoke, and yet scarcely hearing either. Then, quite innocently, she reached out her hand, intending to place it on Geoffrey's shoulder. As it touched him, he started of a sudden, gave a short grunt, and sweeping back his arm furiously, caught her a glancing blow on her elbow. There was a general gasp. Roxanne regained her balance, gave a little cry, and rose quickly to her feet. It had been the greatest shock of her life. This, from Geoffrey, the heart of kindness, of consideration, this instinctively brutal gesture. The gasp became a silence. 12 eyes were turned on Geoffrey, who looked up as though seeing Roxanne for the first time. An expression of bewilderment settled on his face. "Why, Roxanne," he said haltingly. Into 12 minds entered a quick suspicion, a rumour of scandal. Could it be that behind the scenes with this couple, apparently so in love, lurked some curious antipathy? Why else this streak of fire across such a cloudless heaven? "Geoffrey," Roxanne's voice was pleading, startled and horrified. She yet knew that it was a mistake. Not once did it occur to her to blame him or to resent it. Her word was a trembling supplication. "Tell me, Geoffrey," it said. "Tell Roxanne, your own Roxanne."
"Why, Roxanne," began Geoffrey again. The bewildered look changed to pain. He was clearly as startled as she. "I didn't intend that," he went on. "You startled me. You... I felt as if someone were attacking me. I... How... Why, how idiotic!"
"Geoffrey." Again the word was a prayer, incense offered up to a high god through this new and unfathomable darkness. They were both on their feet. They were saying goodbye, faltering, apologising, explaining. There was no attempt to pass it off easily. That way lay sacrilege.
Geoffrey had not been feeling well, they said. He had become nervous. Back of both their minds was the unexplained horror of that blow. The marvel that there had been an instant something between them, his anger and her fear. And now to both a sorrow, momentary no doubt, but to be bridged at once while there was yet time. Was that swift water lashing under their feet, the fierce glint of some uncharted chasm? Out in their car, under the harvest moon, he talked brokenly. It was just incomprehensible to him, he said. He had been thinking of the poker game, absorbed, and the touch on his shoulder had seemed like an attack. An attack! He clung to that word, flung it up as a shield. He had hated what had touched him. With the impact of his hand, it had gone, that nervousness. That was all he knew. Both their eyes filled with tears, and they whispered love there under the broad night as the serene streets of Marlowe sped by. Later, when they went to bed, they were quite calm. Geoffrey was to take a week off all work, was simply to loll and sleep and go on long walks until this nervousness left him. When they had decided this, safety settled down upon Roxanne. The pillows under her head became soft and friendly. The bed on which they lay seemed wide and white and sturdy beneath the radiance that streamed in at the window. 5 days later, in the first cool of late afternoon, Geoffrey picked up an oak chair and sent it crashing through his own front window. Then he lay down on the couch like a child, weeping piteously and begging to die. A blood clot, the size of a marble, had broken in his brain.